And so Bishop Richard J. Malone, Bishop of Buffalo, and Attorney Terrence Connors from Connors LLP will be happy to answer any questions you have pertaining to any of this as well as they can in a moment. But we're going to start with Bishop Malone giving an overview of the program itself. Bishop?
Thank you very much, George, and thank you to all of you for coming. And I reiterate what George already said, that the original motive for this meeting had nothing to do with the Norbert Orsulitz announcement. That caught us all off guard on Tuesday, as it did, I think, you folks. But I know you're very interested in that, and as when we finish talking about this program we're about to introduce in the diocese as an outreach to victims, then we'll be happy to entertain any other questions you may have about the recent news. So hopefully that'll work out for everybody. So today I am announcing, and I'm happy to announce, the establishment of a voluntary independent reconciliation and compensation program for those who have made claims that they were sexually abused as children by a member of the clergy in the Diocese of Buffalo. You are probably aware that some of the other dioceses, especially downstate, have introduced a program of this sort last year, and we've been watching it very carefully and decided that we could, in an adapted form, make it work well here too. Individuals who have previously made claims will be contacted and invited to participate in this voluntary program offering monetary settlements. The program will be administered by former New York State Supreme Court Justice Jerome Gorski and former New York State Supreme Court Justice and former surrogate judge Barbara Howe. Justice Gorski is an arbitrator and mediator with National Arbitration and Mediation. Justice Howe is senior counsel to the law firm Woods Oviatt Gilman. They will determine the appropriate compensation to be offered. We're doing this now because I know it's the right thing to do. The victims and our church in Western New York cannot move forward until the pain of the past is properly addressed. Over the past year, as I mentioned, several other dioceses have launched similar programs, and they were well received generally and appreciated by many of those victims as a form of healing. We pray that this monetary compensation, together with our acknowledgement that they were hurt, we know that, we hear it, we believe it, can be a significant step in helping them to heal. If we can help victims to heal, then we as a church can begin to heal from this awful part of our past. We know that the sexual abuse of anybody, and especially of minors, is a crime and it is a grave sin against the law of God. I want to say this to you who are victims. We are so very, very sorry for the pain of the abuse that has happened to you. We're sorry, I'm sorry, and we want to do everything we can going forward, reaching out to you who have come to us in the past. This is the purpose of this program. The program is a next step to continue the diocese's ongoing commitment to protect children and help victims. In many cases, the diocese has already provided a pastoral response, counseling, and other assistance as needed to victims. Since 1990, under the leadership of Bishop Edward Head, there has been a written policy to address these issues. Since 2003, there's been mandatory training and a system of background checks for all who regularly interact with young people in our diocese. Under a policy known as Protecting God's Children, every cleric, church employee, and volunteer initially goes through hours of training, and then every month they are also required to read additional training materials and answer questions pertaining to new trends in the ways predators are targeting young victims. That's all of that we pledge ourselves to do, is to keep us focused on the ongoing scourge, really, of sexual abuse in society and in the ways it can creep in even into the life of the church. Clergy, church employees, and volunteers are not only trained to identify signs of sexual abuse, but are also required to report suspected abuse to the district attorney's office and to our victim assistance coordinator, Jackie Joy. And I think Jackie is right over here, and Jackie is experienced in trauma therapy and knows how to facilitate diocesan assistance for victims and their families. Jackie, we are very grateful to you who do that work so very, very well. Thank you for coming today also. In this regard, the Catholic Church has a proactive policy and will continue to protect the rights of all people with a special concern for the vulnerable, especially the young. This new independent reconciliation and compensation program will be paid from self-insurance liability and investment fund reserves. You're also considering, if necessary, the sale of diocesan properties. The donations made to the recently completed Upon This Rock campaign or the ongoing Catholic Charities campaign will not be used for this program. That's a very important consideration. We want to thank you for helping us to make that clear. Know that people's recent donations are not going to be directed in that way. Now, before we open up to any questions, I would like to ask Terry Connors, whom you all know, who helps us with these challenges in our diocese, to explain a little bit about the mechanics of how this program is going to work, this program that's beginning actually today.
Thank you, Bishop. Glad to do it. It's been the product of a substantial amount of thought, a great deal of research, some thoughtful prayer, and collaboration with the other dioceses. What we have tried to do is to develop a program that is extremely user-friendly, and I think we've accomplished that goal. Essentially, what will occur is that today, a number of letters will be sent out to individuals who have made claims of abuse to our diocese. We have a record of those. We have a catalog. We've kept it very carefully. We've had interaction with them along the way. And those claims will then be received by Jackie Joy, our victim assistance coordinator. Those claims will then be sent to independent administrators of the program. We have no control over Justice Howe and no control over Justice Gorski. They will administer this program as they see fit. But here's how it will work. The individuals will file their claims with the diocese, who will then make sure that they go directly to the administrators. The administrators then have sole and exclusive control over the determination of the compensation. They will determine what's appropriate. They will look at the background information provided by the claimants. They will look at any corroborating or supporting documentation that's provided. And they will ask us for our input, but that's all we will have is input. We'll submit what information we have, what records we've accumulated over the years, and they will then make the decision. And that decision is final. It's binding. We have no appeal from that decision. But the individuals who make the claims have every right to withdraw at any point along the process. It's a voluntary program for them. And if at some point during the course of this proceeding they're uncomfortable or even unhappy, they can withdraw and preserve whatever rights they may have in the future. So we believe that it offers a great deal of attraction for those individuals, many whom I've spoken to, many whom the bishop has spoken to, who desire closure. They want to go on with their lives, and they feel this is part of the healing process. So instead of waiting for long and protracted litigation that may not even be possible unless there's new legislation, they now have an opportunity to present their claim to an independent arbitrator who will then decide, who will then value their judgment, value their statements, interpret what it is they have to say, and get some closure. And that, to many of them, is more valuable than anything else. And so the process is going to be expedited. We expect that the invitations will go out today, but they'll be on a rolling basis. They will then be placed in the hands of distinguished jurists who, although are very busy, They've committed to block out their schedule to accomplish these goals. And once all the claims are in and reviewed and resolved, we will try to have them render decisions within 30 days of the acquisition of all of the evidence that they have, which for any of you who have been exposed to litigation, understand that is a remarkable pace, but it's the right thing to do. And it's something that can be part of the healing process. So today, we begin that process. We believe that the benefit of our program is that we have looked to some of the other dioceses, we have examined what's worked for them, and we have fine-tuned it for our diocese. And we think that the program that we offer to those individuals who suffered abuse at the hands of our clergy is probably the gold standard right now. And we're anxious to get that process started.
Terry, can you say how far back the claims will go that you will entertain?
The claims that we entertain, Al, will be from anyone who has already made a claim with the diocese. In other words, we have those on record, those individuals who have appeared and been interviewed, who have filed documentation with us, who have been heard by our very active and very competent Diocesan Review Board. But some of those claims go back to 1950, and even earlier, some of them. So it's a long span of time. But we'll take a look at all of them and give them all due consideration.
So the advantage for some claimants would be they would not be available of the courts because of statutes of limitation, and this would be like their last chance to get compensation or justice.
That's incredibly accurate and very perceptive. They would have no chance, given the current state of the legislation right now. They would not have the opportunity to be heard, would have no closure at all, and would have no viable legal option.
Do you have an estimate of how many claims we're talking about?
It's impossible to say exactly how many, but in 2005, we said publicly that there were 93 claims against 53 clerics. Obviously, since 2005, the claims have gone up. But they've gone up on a rather small scale. We don't know exactly because the claims aren't all in yet. But here's what we do know. We know that, as Bishop Malone just told you, in 1990, Bishop Head put forward, way ahead of the charter, way ahead of his time, policies and procedures. We believe that that proactive stance on his part resulted in a diminution, a lessening of claims. And so we're hopeful that they will all be manageable and that the amount of claims, the number of claims, will be something that we can handle with our two extremely competent jurists.
Approximately how many, though? Can you give us a number approximately?
Well, we told you 93 in 2005,
right,
and it's gone up. It's difficult to pinpoint it, but maybe another 15 or 20 claims as well.
So it would be fair to say at least 100.
It would be fair to say that that's a good approximation, but Al, it's incapable of an exact calculation because we don't have any of the claims yet. For example, more could come in on the basis of the revelations with respect to Father Auschwitz that we don't have.
In order to get money for this, will you be selling off more real estate? How will this work? Where is money coming from?
Well, as I mentioned right toward the end, and that we know that's an important question. As I mentioned toward the end, none of it will come from Upon This Rock, that was our big capital campaign, or Catholic Charities. It will come from self-insurance liability and investment fund reserves. And if it's necessary, we'll look to some of our diocesan properties to put on sale as well. The hotel.
Is that a possibility?
Yes.
What properties would you be referring to?
Well, we'll have to take a look at them all. We're not sure at this point.
We also
There'll be no sacred cows, though. We'll take a close look at everything.
We also intend to look at the possibility of insurance coverage. It's a very controversial aspect because, as you can expect, in the 1950s and 60s, the insurance coverage may not even be available. It may not be found. We've done some great research. Our insurance director has gone back to look to see if there are policies that might cover. And we'll reach out to those insurance companies, many of whom may want to participate on a voluntary basis because it would contain their liability going forward.
How long have you all been working on this compensation program? Because, as you mentioned, it is ironic that it comes out the same week that we're hearing from someone saying
truly
they were abused by a priest.
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, we just came from a 1 o'clock meeting with my priests, and I told them this was a very important meeting. Please do whatever you can to come, and it was a huge group of them. And we sent that invitation out last Thursday or Friday to talk about this program before the Auschwitz thing ever happen. So we've probably been working on this now. In the state, it's a year and a half anyway.
Yes.
These programs began down in the downstate dioceses, the Archdiocese of New York, the Diocese of Brooklyn, Diocese of Rockville Center. And we were interested in that, but we're a different culture in so many ways than downstate. We all know that. And so we wanted to watch that for a while, see how it was working, while we continued our own approach, which is on a case-by-case basis to reach out with a pastoral response, which we've done for years, and have resolved a lot of things happily. So how long have we been doing this? 5 or 6 months, we've been taking a close look.
We've been actively and intensively watching this program for at least 5 or 6 months because it takes drafting. We've been reaching out to our colleagues in other dioceses for a longer period of time to see exactly what works and what is going to be the best way to deliver this.
Cardinal Dolan was the first one to announce a program of this sort. And so we were watching very, very closely, and we think it's working. And so we kind of let them be the pilot and then decided it was good to adapt it to our own approach. It has been generally well received down there, which is encouraging to us.
Through the years, the diocese and many organizations faced with this kind of challenge have been very quiet. There haven't been press conferences, there haven't been statements. You know, today there's a press conference, there's an apology. What's changed? Has the Me Too movement been a factor? Can you just kind of talk about the atmosphere?
It's really not the Me Too movement, which of course is a good thing in my judgment. It's really has been, I think the church experienced tremendous remorse and guilt and a sense of wake up as a result of the horrors that were revealed starting in Boston. I saw those up close and personal when I was there, of course. And so I think learning from that, we want to be as present to the media and as transparent as we possibly can. Some things, of course, remain confidential with these cases. That's kind of where it is. We're trying to do this in a new way.
So here's an important point on confidentiality. There will be no confidentiality. This will not be a situation where the individual who makes the claim and resolves his or her claim has to sign an agreement where they don't say anything about it. They can say anything they want. They can say what their claim is, who the priest is, who the cleric is. It's perfectly at their discretion. The only thing that will remain confidential will be what they provide to the administrators, because that's their own personal records, that's their own personal material, and many of them want it to remain confidential.
Nothing will be revealed about them. They can reveal what they want.
They're free to talk about it. There's no restrictions.
Harry, a small thing, but will this arbitration involve lawyers, attorneys?
Well, it's a good question. Here's the way it will work out. The claimants are free to make claims without representation. But before they sign away any rights and before they conclude their participation, we want them to consult with a lawyer. And if they decide they don't want to, we'll provide one at no charge to them to review their rights so that we make sure they understand what they're giving up in return for the resolution of this. Now, the only participation of lawyers will be if they're represented by counsel, they can submit to the administrator to review their claim, and we can submit as well. If someone submits a claim that we've investigated and we know it to be false, we will notify the administrator. And there is a certification on the claims that they must certify under penalty of perjury or prosecution if it's false. All right? So that protects us and it protects the administrators as well.
Father Orsowitz was removed from active public ministry in 2003. He admitted to me in an interview that he sexually abused kids going back to the 70s. My question is, to what extent was the diocese aware of those abuses much earlier than 2003?
I'm glad to take it because I was here at the time. Bishop Malone was not here at the time. There were some reports made about Father Orsowitz. When those reports were received by the diocese, they were investigated, and at the time, the gold standard was to send someone away for evaluation at an accredited facility. And as he has said publicly, he went away. He was sent away and went to a facility for counseling and some form of rehabilitation to find out whether or not he was suitable for ministry. When he came back with a clean bill of health, advised that he was able to come back and serve, he did serve. But as he also told you, there was no evidence of abuse after he came back, and he served in a guarded fashion. In other words, he was, I believe, a chaplain of a hospital. He worked in another non-parish situation. But then the charter came in 2002, and that changed everything. And essentially what the charter said, if there's any credible evidence of a prior claim of abuse, zero tolerance. And he was removed from ministry at that point in time.
A clarification on the timeline. He told me that he went back into parish ministry and actually did work with children immediately after his treatment in Southland. That is not a guarded situation.
Yeah. I'm not aware of that, but and we'll take a look at that and see if that's an accurate statement or not. And he also said, I believe to you, that he did not abuse any child afterwards, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So.
Do you have any evidence that he did?
At this point, we do not, no. But I'm sure that there will be a reach out. There has already been to any of the parishes where he served. So if anyone has a complaint or anyone has a claim, they can make it. And that's what this program is designed to address. Not, it is not, it is nowhere near that.
I myself looked in the file right away after the news conference with Norbert Orsolitz the other day, because his admission that there were dozens caught us by off guard, and I did not see, there are cases there for sure, allegations there, but it did not look to me like dozens and dozens, and maybe it is, and maybe we're waiting for others to come forth. By the way, people should know, and I'll say this very strongly and sincerely, we want victims to come forth. If there are victims out there who have not come forth for this, for reconciliation, for healing, and now in this new program for compensation, the church wants them to come forth. We owe that to these people who are our brothers and sisters and who have been wounded by people in ministry they should have been able to trust.
Will someone who, will you have to, will anyone who's contacted you with allegations of abuse the last 40 or 50 years be contacted, or will they have had to go through a deeper process with the diocese when they contact you? I mean, if you've got a letter from someone maintaining abuse, you'll contact them?
That's yes. The way it's working.
The way it works is what whoever has made that
Terry
claim.
Terry knows more about the mechanics than I do, so.
Any allegation, they'll be contacted.
Yes, unless it's totally deemed to be incredible. See, a lot of these allegations are reviewed by our diocesan review board, which had judges and prosecutors and social workers and really an excellent board. And some have been deemed to be incredible. But anyone who has filed a claim will receive a claim form, and they can then submit it to the administrator.
You know, Steve? Let me ask, if I could, Steve Timmel is our chief financial officer of the diocese, and Steve would have a better handle on that, I think. Why don't you sit down so you can be near the mics?
Yes, one question I would have is, what is the time period that you're looking at?
I was speaking specifically to victims of Orsolitz.
Just Orsolitz.
Just Orsolitz? I'm not aware of any of Orsolitz's victims having been compensated at this point.
Could you then discuss more broadly compensation for victims broadly since, I mean, I know 1950 has been sort of a date prior, and I know that
I don't have it going back to 1950. I think in the last 20 years, I think the number is in the $1.2 million range.
And do you have an anticipation of what it will cost going forward now that you have this funding in place? Is there, you know, sort of a protected amount that you would?
I think it's too early to tell. It all depends on the process and what the administrators, what they deem to be valid claims. So we cannot give a number of looking into the future.
Bishop, can you talk about, it's nice to have this fund to deal with the victims who've been abused by the clergy, but what's being done to help members of the clergy so that this is not repeated, that this does not continue?
Well, that's a very, very important question. And there are a number of safeguards. So Bishop Grosch, my auxiliary bishop, meets with regularly with priests who are unassignable for various reasons. And I might ask him to comment on that if you don't mind, Bishop Grosch, because it's a very serious program. These people are expected to come, so there's an element of that. Also, in many cases, if not all, they have been for or are receiving some kind of therapy or counseling. I can't say everyone is, but that would be part of it as well. And we're always looking at how to make sure that that is a strong kind of a vigilance we keep. Bishop, would you want to? Bishop Grosch does this. He's my auxiliary bishop and has a particular responsibility for that area. Thank you. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Bishop. I appreciate it. Of course, when the complaints come in or the concerns, that comes immediately to our victim assistance coordinator. So she is the one who actually prepares the documentation, which immediately comes to myself and legal counsel. In that situation, I immediately contact the alleged victims to notify them that the case has been received. And of course, if we're dealing with a particular priest and the credibility would be there, immediately that priest is removed from his service and his active ministry in the Diocese of Buffalo. We then, of course, make sure that the priest goes to a process of rehabilitation. We have several of those centers. One, for example, St. Luke's Institute in Silver Springs, Maryland, and we also have an institute called South Downs in Canada. And it's an actual 18-month program through which the individual would go through, especially in cases where an individual priest may have been indeed involved in a particular case of sexual abuse. And then the important thing, as I say, is the follow-up, and that's to what the bishop is referring, to make sure that, again, there's not a repeat of that inappropriate behavior. And so when they are discharged after that period of 18 months, I continue to keep tabs on them, and they have an actual program of steps, for example, regular counseling, their spiritual director, their confessor, the accountability to me. In fact, there are individuals who meet with me on a regular basis monthly to be sure that they're following their program as outlined by these professional people. In addition, as well as has been noted by the audit committee, when they do come in to do the audits for the diocese, they commend us because I do have a group of priests who have been, we call unassignable priests, who do meet monthly. And basically, it's a spirituality kind of group in which they support one another, they pray together, but again, the accountability is there. So on occasion, I meet with them. I've attempted to form several of those groups. So they're just not out there ready to kind of do the same thing they did before. So there is an accountability which has to be there, and the oversight that definitely has to be there. Is that kind of addressing the issue? Okay.
It's an important question.
Thank you.
No problem.
Terry, in the early 80s, when the reports came in on Orsulitz, at that time, why didn't the diocese go to the cops?
In the early 80s. The reports that we received were, I think the first one, I don't have the chronology in front of me, but I don't think the first one was received until much later than the 80s, report to the diocese.
But he got sent to treatment in 83, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the chronology on that, to be honest with you. But what happened at the time was what was done nationally. An individual was sent for counseling. I'm not sure that it wasn't reported to the authorities at the time. It may have been, but I do know this, that the evolution of that process is such now that our diocese has a compact with each of the district attorneys for the 8 counties within the diocese. And if there is a prosecutable offense, it's reported to the district attorney and to the authorities. Now, the answer to your question is most likely that if it came in the 80s or the 90s, the allegation was something that allegedly took place in the 60s. It would not be a prosecutable offense. So under those circumstances, even under our current compact, you would not report it to the prosecutors. They don't want those old cases because there's nothing that they can do with them.
Well, would they not want the opportunity to interview some? I mean, there's, you know, there's skyrocketing recidivism rates with pedophilia. Wouldn't the investigator want the opportunity to question,
Yeah, what we were told when we were negotiating the compact with the district attorneys, we met with each one of them, and essentially they said they weren't shirking their responsibilities, but they basically said if the statute of limitations has run on the offense and we cannot prosecute, there's really nothing that we can do. And
those conversations were happening in the 70s and the 80s. The authorities were telling the diocese then they didn't want the case.
No, this is when we negotiated our compact, and the compact, I don't remember the exact year of the compact, but it was during Bishop Manziel's tenure when I negotiated the compact with the district attorneys. We met with all 8 of them.
Can you say what the allegations were that were made that led Father Orsolitz to be sent to Southtown?
Essentially allegations of abuse with a child, with someone under 17 years of age. Those were the basic allegations.
Got time for another question or two, or you could ask after.
Bishop Malone, you maintained a consistent diocesan policy that goes back at least to Bishop Mansell and maybe even Bishop Head, I'm not sure, but of in the case of a credible allegation against the priest and the removal of the priest, of not identifying the priest publicly, not naming that priest. In the case of Orsolitz, for example, in 2003, you might have, there was a group of priests that were removed at that time. You might have, it wasn't you, but the diocese might have named those priests, kind of allowing people to be aware mm-hmm. that they are out there,
yeah.
that they have abused, mm-hmm. and potentially could abuse again. While other dioceses have chosen to name priests, this diocese has chosen not to. Will you continue that? And if so, why?
Thank you, Jay, for another good question. That's a situation I have inherited. Right now, we are involved in a new consideration of that whole situation. And the reasons you indicate are clear. First of all, that victims often find themselves kind of liberated and empowered to come forth. If they've not yet come forth, if they see in print the name of their abuser, we know that. And also, in the case of a person who's a priest who's off the job, you can make the argument that it's good for people in the area, in the neighborhood, to know that person could be a risk. So we are right now engaged in a reconsideration of a policy that I have inherited. It was in place when I came, but we're looking at it anew.
All right, thanks everybody. And if you have any side questions afterward for any of us, especially Terry.